Coinbase being in the game for over a decade, you know, you would have expected them to have more Bitcoin on the balance sheet, but it hasn't come to pass.
I'm thinking as much of a lead as Coinbase blew in terms of their ability to stack Bitcoin over the years, that's just really unfathomable.
It seems like we have a little bit of that froth right now when it comes to companies buying Bitcoin. Do you think that that is a top signal? Like, are we getting closer to the top than maybe some of us would like to think we are?
Famous last words, but I don't think so. When you start feeling like, oh yeah, we're going to win and we're going to $10 million like tomorrow, at that point, you got to start thinking to yourself, okay, we're getting out over our skis here, and there might be a little bit of volatility around the corner.
Assuming that we're still in a four-year cycle, do you expect Bitcoin treasury companies to be the reason for the next bear market? Welcome to the Bitcoin Playbook, where we discuss proven strategies for using Bitcoin in your business. I'm your host, Josh Friedemann, and Trey Sellers and John Gordon join me today for another roundup episode. Today, we talk about how a Japanese hotel company now owns more Bitcoin than Coinbase, how a movie studio is beginning to add Bitcoin to its balance sheet, and a recent article by Trey Sellers that cautions you to pay attention to how much you're paying for these Bitcoin treasury companies. Here are John and Trey. Welcome back to another roundup episode. Today, we're going to be talking about a number of stories, many of them connected to companies buying more Bitcoin, which has been the trend across the last year, especially. Just at the very beginning of this week, we found out that Metaplanet now holds more Bitcoin than Coinbase. So, John, I want to turn it over to you first. What are your thoughts on this? Especially, I guess it's interesting to think about how this Japanese hotel company now has more Bitcoin than what is America's best known crypto brand.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty incredible rise and just focus on stacking Bitcoin to their treasury as a public company and tapping into the Japanese markets where many of the early plays are, particularly in the US. And I think from an American perspective, and as you mentioned, Coinbase being in the game for over a decade, you know, you would have expected them to have more Bitcoin on the balance sheet, but it hasn't come to pass. I mean, they're marketing now has been, I think, pretty strong, actually, pro-Bitcoin, showing housing prices measured in Bitcoin and having more of a focus here. But of course, there's hundreds of coins and other shitcoins on there ultimately, and becoming more of that casino. And what they're showing, I think, has been difficult for new retail investors to discern kind of what's real, what's not. Where do I even buy Bitcoin if it's second, third, fourth on the page? So getting to 10,000 Bitcoin, taking out of the strategy playbook, being able to tap into bigger and bigger capital pools to buy Bitcoin for, yeah, as you mentioned, otherwise a hotel operator is super impressive. And I think they show no signs of stopping anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a hotel operator, right? This is a Bitcoin hedge fund that was, you know, taken over by strong Bitcoiners who actually understand the value proposition of what Bitcoin brings to the world and the asymmetric opportunity that it presents. And if you decide to embrace that opportunity with open arms and be really aggressive about it, you can actually open up a world of new possibilities for your company, which Metaplanet is seeing in just limit up day after day after day on the stock price. I don't know when this is going to end. It definitely will end at some point in terms of like just going up parabolically every single day. Like that type of move cannot be sustained over the long term. And there's definitely going to be some volatility. But you know, the fact that Coinbase has been around for so long, like I bought my first Bitcoin in Coinbase back in like 2014. And, you know, just looking back and thinking back at what has happened between now and then, and thinking as much of a lead as Coinbase blew in terms of their ability to stack Bitcoin over the years, it's just really unfathomable. And I think like it really goes to show what the people at the top of that company are actually prioritizing. I think, you know, they very much view this as a traditional business that plays in crypto. And they're very much influenced, I think, by like the traditional valuation metrics of a business, which is revenue based as opposed to balance sheet based. And They're trying to hit these quarterly targets and pulling all kinds of levers that go way far outside of what is actually optimal for somebody to just embrace Bitcoin and focus in that direction. And so you can see this stark contrast in the way that you can develop and grow your business if you focus solely on Bitcoin, as opposed to getting distracted by all the other shiny objects that don't really have any value, but a lot of people get really enthusiastic about. There's a clear distinction here, and you can see it in the results.
It's interesting how Metaplanet has grown so quickly. Trey, you mentioned that its price is just going parabolic, and there have been pullbacks, but it seems to just keep on climbing. I'm curious to know if either of you have any sense of where else in the world, regionally or by country, you feel like a Bitcoin treasury company would do exceptionally well. You know, Japan is interesting. It has some unique parts about it that make it very attractive to Japanese investors. And then obviously people that are looking to make gains in the United States and elsewhere also are buying in. But are there other places, and I don't have a great answer this coming to mind for myself, but other places where Bitcoin treasury companies would be especially beneficial to investors within that country?
Yeah, I think one that comes to mind is Korea. I know their president or new elect is kind of going to loosen some of the guidelines around Bitcoin investing, and they certainly have a strong monetary base as well. So perhaps kind of riding on the coattails too of Japan and I think the Asian markets, even maybe being ahead on a timeline perspective, they're sort of ahead too on the investing. Obviously Bitcoin's trading 24/7, but in terms of their stock markets, I think that could be a country to watch. Just opening up regulations, enabling more companies to come in, where we've seen more tech innovation come out of that country as well. That's one that comes to mind. I don't know, Trey, if you have others.
Yeah, the one that I'm aware of that's in motion, in progress right now is in Brazil. I don't know exactly how much detail is out there for public consumption at this point in time, so I'll stay quiet, I guess, at least for now on the details that I'm aware of. But apparently there are some, you know, interesting political or tax advantage type nature going on down in Brazil as well. And there's a huge amount of capital there that is essentially in a very similar way to Metaplanet in Japan, not able to buy Bitcoin. And so these types of companies do bring opportunity for new capital to come into Bitcoin and get exposure to the price by taking advantage of some of the regulatory infrastructure that is already in place that prevents them from these capital allocators from being able to buy Bitcoin directly. So there's definitely this arbitrage that's happening across these different jurisdictions. Will that be saturated and those opportunities be taken up by new companies over time? Yes. What is the extent to that will play out? I don't really know, because I'm, you know, very much not familiar with all the different jurisdictions and what those opportunities are. But it's very clear that if you discover those things and you put those plans in motion, there's a lot of money to be made in kind of taking some zombie type company and turning it into a Bitcoin treasury company, raising money in the capital markets and arbitraging these regulatory constraints that investors have, and being able to pump that money into Bitcoin and take advantage of the like asymmetric opportunity that Bitcoin presents. And just the fact that people are starved for the ability around the world to access this asset that has just performed so well over the last, 5, 10, 15 years.
Yep. And if you believe in the long-term trajectory of Bitcoin, which I know all three of us do, then looking at what Coinbase has not done across the last decade or so, it's going to go down in history as a major whiff on their part. At the same time, we have Strategy, who's playing this whole other this game at a whole other order of magnitude difference, where they have purchased more Bitcoin in 1 week than Metaplanet has across, however long it's been stacking. So there's a lot of interesting things going on in this space. Another one, a company that's recently started buying Bitcoin, is Angel Studios. Popularly, they're probably most well known for the Chosen TV series, but among Bitcoiners, they probably are well known for previously hosting the Tuttle Twins, which have some great Bitcoin episodes. They're looking to potentially IPO soon, and they added 300 Bitcoin to their balance sheet as a way to differentiate themselves in the market. So I guess the question here is that going to continue being something that companies that want to IPO are doing. And do you see this overall? Do you feel like the market will see this as a positive differentiation, or is it once again just sort of limited to Bitcoiners here?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a positive development. And for any company that actually does have a positive operating cash flow business to add Bitcoin even before going public, it is being recognized, Bitcoin, as sound money, as collateral, as something to be valued very positively in that formal valuation when the public markets come to judge whatever that stock price, you know, ultimately should be and how much capital then they can raise to expand operations. So I think kind of a pre-IPO, it's a great strategy. And certainly for producing content that, as you mentioned with Total Twins, that goes into educating around sound money and helping kids understand and answering the question, what is money, which ultimately isn't really taught in the schools today, you know, in the public schools. So it's cool to see that from and just makes sense. I think from the leadership at the top, they've understood these principles and now putting that into action, which is really the important step.
Yeah, what excites me about this is it's another example of a company adding a Bitcoin treasury as opposed to a brand new Bitcoin treasury company, quote unquote, which is like these hedge fund structures that we've been talking about. And so like this is a real business that has real revenues. You know, it sounds like they're thinking about going public. That like adding Bitcoin now to the balance sheet, I don't know if they just announced that they had done that or they actually did do that recently. Seems kind of opportunistic to me. You know, it's like, hey, let's ride the wave of enthusiasm that, you know, has been around the Bitcoin treasury companies and Bitcoin on balance sheet. That's all fine though, right? Like the number one contributor to Bitcoin adoption around the world always has been, and for the foreseeable future always will be, number go up technology and just the value of Bitcoin going up and the enthusiasm around that piece of it. And so, you know, we'll continue to see different cases of businesses and individuals announcing that they own Bitcoin or that they're buying Bitcoin into a wave of enthusiasm. That's how that adoption goes forward. And then you always have these kind of washouts. I think we're going to see that with some of these Bitcoin treasury companies too, is that there's a washout period as the price, you know, kind of comes back off of the euphoria. And the people who have not gone into this process with a very strong conviction in what they're doing and a very good plan for how to manage that type of volatility and any leverage that they're putting on are going to be kind of flushed out of the game. But you always ratchet up at a higher level at the bottom there. And so every cycle we see this like kind of step up pattern in the people who are riding that adoption wave during the euphoria. And then, you know, some portion of them are washed out, but there's some portion that remains convicted and with a very strong position to be able to ride into the future waves. And that's how like the strength of Bitcoiners continues to grow over time.
Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out: Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at veluscommerce. Make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. So it seems like we have a little bit of that froth right now when it comes to companies buying Bitcoin. Do you think that that is a top signal? Like, are we getting closer to the top than maybe some of us would like to think we are? Is that a sign that we're getting towards the top? Or do you feel like this is still early days? We're going to see a whole lot more companies buying Bitcoin and a lot more craziness before we actually peak?
Famous last words, but I don't think so. I don't think we're there yet. The market really hasn't had that euphoria that I was just alluding to, right? Like it's it hasn't gotten away from us. The price hasn't been able to just kind of run and rip day after day, week after week, going like orders of magnitude higher the way that it has in prior cycles. Now, you could make the argument that we're past those days and that we're not going to see that type of movement anymore. I tend to think that what we've seen thus far in this bull market, which has lasted, you know, really kind of 2 years, we've been stair-stepping higher for the last 2 years, but nothing's gotten like out of control. And I think that is a result of new and more institutional adoption and these larger capital allocators coming in. It's a result of new derivative type structures that are built around the Bitcoin ecosystem that allows for, you know, various hedging strategies that kind of keeps a lid on the price going up and also puts a little bit of a floor on the price going down and decreases the volatility that we're seeing. And then, you know, there's just been this massive amount of headwinds from the geopolitical sphere, the macroeconomic sphere that has been weighing on Bitcoin and just not allowing it to just reach escape velocity. I still think that that is ahead of us. We shall see. But I think there's going to be still this period of euphoria where we just jump drastically higher over a short period of time. And at that point, you're going to start seeing a lot more of this like frothiness that you're referring to the point where it like starts to feel like it's getting out of hand. And at that point, like when you start feeling like, oh yeah, we're going to win and we're going to $10 million like tomorrow. At that point, you got to start thinking to yourself, okay, maybe this is getting a little bit, we're getting out over our skis here and there might be a little bit of volatility around the corner.
In previous years, I remember talking with a guest. I don't want to misattribute it, so I won't take a guess at who that guest was. But they were talking about how right now being a couple of years ago at the time, probably holding Bitcoin on your balance sheet was potentially almost a liability. It would make you maybe less attractive, seem more risky to the market. I feel like that's probably changing. I'm curious, maybe especially John, with your insight working with business owners through Satoshi Health Advisors, do you find that consideration ever comes into play? Like if I'm adding Bitcoin to my balance sheet or accepting as payment and then keeping it on the balance sheet, whether or not that will be a positive for their business if they're looking to sell in the future? Does that come up, or are they just Bitcoiners and they say, whatever I have to do, I'm going to do it for the good of my business?
No, I think it's definitely a net positive, and business owners who are recognizing that and have for the last several years have gotten that uptick in saving in Bitcoin and their treasury, and the most efficient way of getting that Bitcoin, ultimately accepting it for payment. And, you know, I think back to a couple of years ago when I started onboarding my first clients of Satoshi Health Advisors, the Bitcoin price was around 25K. And, you know, that point that Trey mentioned, when we started seeing now this stair-stepping upwards of a, you know, extended bull run, any payment you've received and work you provided 2 years ago, if you've been able to save that in Bitcoin, that's worth four times more than the work you put in 2 years ago. So I think that, you know, I continue to see business owners recognizing that and being able to, and also that the percent of patients or customers or users that are paying in Bitcoin is still going to be relatively lower. And you should be able, if you can save that in Bitcoin and not have to convert into fiat, you know, you're ultimately going to see those higher gains. So I think, yeah, the sentiment also in the public market certainly shifted, and it is being seen now. And I agree with Trey, it's, you know, we're not yet nearly at that frothy level, but we're seeing the movement in to, you know, 80 to 100 of publicly traded companies having Bitcoin. On if you don't have Bitcoin at all, that's going to be super risky. But it gets into how much maybe leverage are you taking as an individual or a company to get that Bitcoin on your balance sheet. That's when, you know, there certainly could be more of a blow off top and people getting caught, you know, out ahead of their skis. So, no, I think public or more private companies, single dual owners that I'm working with, certainly see the benefit of adding it and differentiating their business in whatever sector they're working in compared to other competitors that definitely haven't adopted it yet. You probably have a chance to be one of the first in your industry to really integrate a Bitcoin strategy at this point. Whereas in the future, if you don't have a Bitcoin strategy at all, you probably will get left behind. Similar to what, you know, I was too young to appreciate it, but what everyone saw in the 90s with the internet and ultimately the 2000s. And okay, are you going to have a website or are you going to be an internet company? No, everybody is just using the internet. And that's kind of the way it goes, whether you understand the ins and outs of how it works or not. So I see Bitcoin playing that similar role now, but having potentially even a magnitude greater difference, because instead of just information, it is money. And it is the way that we have capital and invest in projects and ultimately have, you know, that opportunity cost of capital as well. And, you know, looking now and seeing what Marty Bent and TFTC just put out this last week has been super fun to play around with. I don't know if you guys have the opportunity cost calculator of just a Chrome browser extension to see anything priced in dollars now priced in Bitcoin. And I think that is a powerful effect in how we evaluate any purchasing decisions. And that particularly weighs it from the business owner's perspective, where you're evaluating, how am I going to allocate capital? How am I going to grow my business, outpace inflation? And still in the fiat world, having to earn your money twice, those are really, really important decisions. So yeah, I think we're still going to see more companies deciding to adopt Bitcoin. We saw a company this last week adopt Ethereum, and that did not go so well for them in the public markets. So that's another good test case and just saying, okay, like, Bitcoin is sound money and everything else isn't. So that can continue to play out.
Yeah, the stigma, I think, around a business or individuals, but you know, we're kind of focusing on businesses these days, right? And that stigma for adopting Bitcoin, for bringing it into your operations or whatever, is definitely fading, right? Like, nobody looks at you like you've got two heads and you're putting the business at risk, existential risk. If you start to think about what could Bitcoin do for the business, what could Bitcoin do for the balance sheet? I'm in Italy right now. I was at a wine tasting earlier, you know, forgive me. And I was talking to this guy from New York who is in finance, and we're sitting there and we're tasting, we're enjoying the beautiful view. And we're talking about, what do you do? He said he's in finance. What do you do? Kind of in finance. I work for a financial services company that focuses on Bitcoin. And there was like not even a blink of an eye. It was just like, oh, that's cool, you know, and then move on with the conversation. Like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that type of comment would have been like, oh, really? You know, you would get like these weird looks. It just doesn't happen anymore. And that's because we've kind of crossed the threshold of Bitcoin being something that everybody knows about, somewhat understands, and it's just become not weird anymore for people to start talking about that. I do worry, though, that the Bitcoin treasury company ecosystem that is developing, I mean, I fully understand this is like it's different at its core, it's different at its essence, but it does feel quite a bit like some of the like crypto crazy manias, yep, that ICOs. We've had in past cycles, the ICOs, the NFT stuff, like all of that. It there are certainly some undertones that are parallel to those. I worry that there's something out there that we're not seeing, or that the market's not anticipating, that could end up in creating some pain for a lot of people. So, time will tell, but it's going to be fun to watch for sure.
Yeah. And I was going to say, that's where, proof of reserves comes in, and public companies that are stacking Bitcoin can really show, hey, here is cryptographic proof that this is our Bitcoin. Cause I think we do run into those similar challenges, as Trey, you're alluding to, but ultimately of paper Bitcoin, of Bitcoin being issued beyond the 21 million Bitcoin that we know will ever exist. And as of today, we have 450 Bitcoin that are being mined every day on average, and around, so $50 million coming into the market. If there's enough demand to buy that up, we'll see the price level out as demand continues to grow. And we see these different buyers coming in, or at least announcements to buy, which isn't fully buying, and that isn't necessarily priced in, or can't be priced into to Bitcoin itself. We run the risk of, previous cycle where we had companies ultimately fraudulently saying, hey, we have Bitcoin on behalf of customers, or here now we have Bitcoin on behalf of equity holders. And is that Bitcoin really there or not? And so that's where ultimately holding your own keys, whether as an individual or business, you can help address any of those question marks that might come in, because certainly could, could be a play here later on in the cycle, or for companies that are maybe trying to take out a loan towards the top to go and buy Bitcoin and then, you know, not being able to cover and getting margin called. So
yeah, the leverage is always what kills it, right? Like there's always some hidden leverage that you can't see or that people don't understand, or that is like beyond the scope of what they're able to measure. And it feels totally fine when the market's going up, or there's like just a little bit of volatility or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, I can manage this. I've got a plan. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like Mike Tyson comes and punches you in the face, and your plan is no longer really holding up to scrutiny. It worries me a little bit to see like all of the focus outside of what like the core of this whole thing is, which is like hold Bitcoin, hold your own keys if you can at all, and just like stay humble and stack sats, right? Like that is never going to steer you wrong. When you start reaching for yield, when you start like getting super excited about what's going on in these different avenues of potential excess return above what Bitcoin can provide, that's where things start getting dangerous. So just a word of caution to everybody who's thinking about these things.
If you were hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth, wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. So to that end, you've recently written an article about maybe the dangers of the MNAV, or at least the MNAV getting a little too far out on your Fire BTC Substack. So if you don't mind, we've kind of probably already discussed some small elements of this over the last 20 minutes or so. But could you kind of give a brief rundown and maybe a plug for the article?
Yeah, we've talked about this a little bit. I was definitely alluding to it earlier, you know, in our conversation. But, you know, this probably the most well-known metric around these Bitcoin treasury companies is the concept of MNAV. And it stands for multiple of net asset value. And essentially what it is how much, what is the enterprise value of this company versus the underlying Bitcoin that they're holding? And is the business actually trading in the market at a premium or a discount relative to the Bitcoin holdings? Like, we know where the Bitcoin trades in the market. We know what that's worth. And if you can take it at face value, to John's point, if you can take it at face value that a company owns a certain amount of Bitcoins on their balance sheet, and the value of the business is below the value of that Bitcoin, there's a pretty good chance that you're at least going to, you know, be able to recover and maybe even outperform Bitcoin if you're buying the shares of that company, because you're essentially buying exposure to the underlying asset of Bitcoin at a discount to where the Bitcoin itself is trading in the market. But most of these companies are trading at a premium, and sometimes a really massive premium. Metaplanet is like the biggest example out there right now. It's trading, I've seen 6x, I've seen 9x, I've seen like way more than that. MicroStrategy back in the day traded somewhere between 4 and 10 at one point. It's very short-lived though, right? Because anytime that multiple gets really out of hand, there's a huge incentive for the company itself to issue shares to take advantage of that premium and buy Bitcoin with it. They're selling paper and buying the underlying asset. There's a lesson in there. But then there's also a really big incentive for the market itself, just generally speaking, the market, to front run the company coming in and taking advantage of the premium, because they're taking advantage of that premium expansion as well. Ultimately, when you're buying these companies, and this is the point that I'm trying to make, The trade is, does the premium that you're buying, if you buy it at 2x, is that going to at least be sustained or grow? Is it going to expand from 2x to 3x or 2x to 4x? If it does, you outperform Bitcoin. But if it compresses, and the natural forces around all of this ecosystem is for it to compress, you will underperform just holding spot Bitcoin. So you need to take the calculus that you need to make for any investment is, like, at the base level, Bitcoin is your hurdle rate, right? Is this investment, does it have a chance of outperforming Bitcoin? And does it have a chance of outperforming Bitcoin to a large enough extent that it's worth the extra risk that you're taking on by not just buying spot Bitcoin and going out on this risk curve? I think that there are a lot of people who get caught up in the euphoria of the Bitcoin treasury companies and any other investments around this ecosystem, and they don't really actually understand what the trade is. It's ultimately a basis trade, right? How is this company trading versus the underlying Bitcoin? If you're not thinking about it that way, you have not thought deeply enough about what the opportunity cost is to holding Bitcoin or not. And that's what it ultimately comes down to. That's what the post or the article goes into. It's defining MNAV. It's showing how it works. And then it's issuing this word of caution that, like, hey, it's okay if you want to play this game. I own a little bit of strategy and you know, think like it's totally fine to do that. But you need to understand what the dynamics are here, how they work, and you need a benchmark or a barometer as to whether or not you're actually exceeding that hurdle rate that is Bitcoin's returns.
But there's really no reason that the MNAV should go below one, right? Because last I checked, similar has an MNAV below one. So to me, that's a value stock right there. Now, whether or not I'm going to buy is a different thing. I don't have any plans to, but it seems like there would never be a good reason to have an MNAV below one, or am I missing something?
Well, it could be that there's future expectation that the company is in trouble and they're going to have to sell Bitcoin. There could be a whole lot of other dynamics that at least temporarily causes the market to value the company below its Bitcoin holdings. If you look at that same company and you think these are not valid or this is a short-term trend or something like that, then yeah, it's a great opportunity. MicroStrategy traded at a discount or very close to par on its Bitcoin holdings during the kind of depths of the bear market. That turned out to be a fantastic opportunity because they were able to grow their Bitcoin stack so aggressively. And that's the other point that I kind of hint at, and maybe in a future post I'll go a little bit more in depth, is there's this concept of BTC yield, which essentially is measuring how fast can a company grow its Bitcoin stack in percentage terms. And like Metaplanet has been growing their Bitcoin stack by like over 100% or 200% on a very short-term basis. But they're also starting from a much smaller number. As that number gets larger, so we've seen with Strategy, it's harder and harder to grow at, you know, a very high Bitcoin yield. That yield allows the denominator of this MNAV calculation to grow, which basically creates this like break-even point of any kind of premium compression that you would be experiencing, less the yield that you're getting, is where that break-even point is residing there. So you've got to, the point is that you've got to take in all these different prognostications or calculations into this investment thesis. Is the company valued fairly relative to its Bitcoin holdings? Are they going to be able to grow their Bitcoin yield? Have you timed this correctly? Are you going to be able to get out of the trade at a premium expansion, at some point in the future, so that you can actually harvest that premium yourself? Because if you can't do that, you are spinning your wheels versus Bitcoin, and maybe even ending up with a wealth that is less than what you would otherwise have if you just bought spot Bitcoin and chilled. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like, that's a very easy calculation. You just buy Bitcoin and you wait for it to do its thing. If you try to outperform it, it's going to be very, very difficult to do.
Yep. John, any additional thoughts here?
Not really. And Trey, you covered that really well, and definitely recommend anyone that wants to dig in further to read the article. Super helpful. I think we see these terms and MNAV and being thrown around a lot on X and people analyzing. So being able to dig into it yourself is, and make those investment decisions, is super important. And just maybe one point I'll add is that it does have, of course, the additional layer of counterparty risk. So I think that's like the big calculation and seeing. And if anyone here probably read Nick Bhatia's Layered Money, his first book, but you know that in times of trouble, we can kind of go race up that up the layers to get what is really true or sounder money. And especially with the different layers of stock that are being issued by some of the treasury companies, strategy included, you know, understanding what order you are and the pecking order if things do go wrong in terms of getting your money out of an investment is super important to understand versus getting caught up in, oh, I could make these huge multiples, but you also could go to zero. And I think, again, that's where holding Bitcoin itself, and maybe you go out at that point and want to play around, and people are entitled to make those decisions that you're comfortable with. But certainly understanding the basics and some of those calculations can also identify opportunities, you know, where companies are undervalued. As you mentioned, with Semler being under one, maybe it is a great opportunity. We'll see, you know. And I think just from someone who's been working in the healthcare industry for a while, I think healthcare in general has way under exposure to Bitcoin, right? This is a $5 trillion industry a year, 20% of the economy, and very limited healthcare adoption so far. Starting to see a little bit more, but still, you know, very early days.
As we get a little bit further into this bull market and things start heating up, it's going to be harder and harder to discern which one of these new treasury companies that are sprouting up every week are actually good investments relative to what they historically may have been in this first, you know, kind of cream of the crop, right? Like the companies that have sprung up around here, they probably understand Bitcoin a lot better. When you get a little bit more mature in this, like things start getting a little bit crazier. It gets a little bit looser in the way that people approach this, and they add more leverage, and that leverage is what ultimately kills people. So again, like if you're going to play in this world, and I'm not advocating that you don't, I'm just saying like you need to understand that you're swimming with the sharks a little bit, right? So you need to understand how all of these mechanics work so that you can make good decisions about your investments. And just make sure that you've got a solid bag of Bitcoin in cold storage, like in keys that you control before you even think about any of this other stuff.
Yep. So as we're finishing up today, maybe Trey, we'll start with you. In addition to wherever you'd like for people to go, maybe this final thought, given that, assuming that we're still in a four-year cycle, do you expect Bitcoin treasury companies to be the reason for the thing that triggers the next bear market?
Oh, right now, I kind of feel like they're going to be a key component. Will they trigger the next bear market? Probably not. I don't think they'll trigger it, but I think they will exacerbate it as some portion of that market gets into a position where they need to actually sell Bitcoin to cover some of the liabilities that they start to accrue. Not everybody's going to be able to, you know, issue 0% convertible debt at a 5 or 7 year tenor. Right, the interest rates are going to start creeping out. The tenors are going to start compressing as things mature in the bull market, and that makes the investment like that much more risky. And so, when there is some type of headwind that starts the bear market, at that point, it puts these companies under pressure. They have to make decisions that they wish they didn't have to make, and that's going to put more pressure on the market and allow all of us who are just staying humble and stacking sats to acquire a little bit more at cheaper prices. So that's my perspective there. How's it going to play out, man? I don't know. I wish I did. I would be a lot wealthier right now. But you can start to see like some of the patterns here re-emerging. And so that's why I'm trying to warn people to just, you know, keep your head on a swivel there a little bit. Follow me on X at @TS_HODL and check out my newsletter, FireBTC. It's firebtc.substack.com.
Yeah, great convo, guys, as always. You can follow me on X or Noster at the Bitcoin Yogi. And for my new company, Sound HSA, we do have another Sats for Steps challenge going on this week. If you're out to align with the Prague conference, Bitcoin Prague is happening later this week. If you hit 21,000 steps over those 3 days, you can earn 2,100 sats paid out instantly to your Lightning wallet. So if you want to get the sensation of receiving an instant Bitcoin payment, magic internet money at the speed of light, check out our app, Sound HSA. And yeah, you can also participate from anywhere. You don't need to be in Prague, of course, but it's great to see consistent Bitcoin events, you know, happening around the world, connecting people from all over. So we're excited to be a part of that.
Great. Well, guys, thank you so much for your time today. We'll talk soon.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Bitcoin Playbook. If you want to reach out to either me, Trey, or John, you can find those links down in the show notes. And be sure to check out Trey's recent Fire BTC article talking about the MNAV. As always, keep building, keep growing, and until next time, keep living and leading well.